Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome once again to Madam Perry Salon, the podcast that loves you. I'm your host, Madam Perry, and, your groove mistress, cruise director, I'm just here for you, and I'm happy that you're here, too. First of all, I want to thank everyone who's been subscribing, who's been sharing this with their friends. The downloads, the stats are looking great because of you, and thank you. And because of that, I'm able to continue to get so many great guests on that we've had recently. One of my favorite things, and I know I've said it before, but when I see the reviews you've left on Stitcher and Apple iTunes, and thank you so much for all of those, when I see those, I think about some of the ones that say you like the fact that I have people on that you know, whether it's a musician or an author, a filmmaker, artist, astronomer, whatever, NASA JPL people. And then you also like when I bring on people that you've never heard of and meet somebody new. And I really appreciate that because I like to bring on, people you know, people you don't know in all different areas. So thank you for saying that. Also, I've been posting a little video I made about some of my guests who have prizes and give you discounts, Franny Goldie. If you go to FrannyGoldie.com to buy clothes, just put in MPS, Madam Perry Salon initials, for a discount. And, of course, those are the clothes that Oprah style guru Adam Glassman always puts in his section of the Oprah magazine. Also, he brings her clothes often onto when he visits The View. So, this is some pretty high-end stuff, and you'll get a discount just because of Madam Perry Salon. Also, Tuesday night, my guests were poet Julie E. Blomacki and fiction writer Matt Coyle. Each of them offered a free book to a listener, so all you have to do is send me a message or either through Facebook, either Jennifer Maudette Perry or Madam Perry Salon. Send me a message with your name and let me know, do you want the poetry book by Julie Blomacki or do you want the book by Lost Tomorrow? See, Julie's book is Slide to Unlock. Matt Coyle's new book is Lost Tomorrows. It's the sixth in his Rick Cahill series. So just let me know which one you want, and then, of course, we'll put the names all together, and then I'll have someone else draw the names just to keep it all looking pretty legit. And so don't forget to do that. Also, one more thing is 2 weeks ago, my guest was Kyle Mayberry, sports agent and CEO of True Athletics. And a lot of people have asked me about his information, and he's got a discount, too, for my listeners. But listen, if you're a young person interested in sports, getting ready to go to college, or if you have a son or daughter interested in sports, True Athletics was created to provide a simple and effective way for student athletes to find the right university or college. They help match student athletes with an institution based on their ability. They have a great team of professional advisors made up of retired and current professional athletes with many years of experience in college and pro sports, and they want to make it as easy as possible. They evaluate every bio and profile and find the college universities that are best suited for you and your level. So if you go there to the website and it's spelled TRUATHLETIX, trueathletics.com. And of course, I'll share if you miss it, message me, but I also share it often on all of my social media, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and even LinkedIn. So once you find that, go there. And also, if you go to the How It Works section, they'll tell you what to do. Simple. You don't have to go and find some salesperson that's going to try to pressure you into a lot of things. You choose what you want. One, select a package, bio, and upload a video. Three, select your payment options. Four, that's it. They get a hold of you. And guess what? And these are not very expensive. But right now, to the end of April, you have a 50% discount code that you use at checkout, and it is Strong 2020. That's STRONG2020. Strong 2020 at checkout will get you 50% off your package. That is great. So trueathletics.com. Definitely hit them up. Now, you know, because everybody's got more time to listen to podcasts and people are asking me what's coming up next, who's coming next, and you want more content, hey, I've got it, and I'm bringing it to you, and thank you so much for letting me know. Tonight, a lot of people have asked me about this show and what's coming on. You know, it's all right here, folks. I'm bringing you the love. First of all, I've got a guest co-host on this show. You've met her here before, and her name is Andrea Walker, but she writes as A.L. Walker. A.L. Walker is a fantasy author. This year she released her first book in the Kittry series, fantasy series, called What Happened in the Cove. Andrea, welcome to Madame Perry Salon again.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. You know, I was saying the last time, you know, when we finally met in person after all this time, I think that was the last good time for everybody for a while.
Yeah, it was right before everything shut down.
Yeah, at Tucson at the Wild Wild West Con, and I think I remember it was a Sunday afternoon. You came out there from Phoenix. We met. We got to have some fun, you know, talk together. And then, as you've probably heard me say, that after you left, I think you came on Saturday, and then I left on Sunday, right? And then on Sunday evening, we turned our clocks forward,
yeah.
But we didn't know we were turning. We were going to the Twilight Zone, did we?
Right.
So before I'm so glad to have you here. But you know, before I bring Jim in, and I'm very excited to have Jim back. He's a very interesting fellow and very entertaining, as well as a prolific and very clever man, prolific writer and clever man. Tell us, for people who are new to your series, What Happened in the Cove, just give them an idea, just what it's about.
Yeah, it's basically alien meets girl. It's science fiction, romance, urban fantasy, a little bit of mix of everything. There's a carnival theme that runs through all three books. But one is in progress, but... it's a really fun series. It's meant to be fun. It's not like really dramatic or anything. It's meant to relax by. So,
I like that alien meets girl. I like that. That just leads off right away. And by the way, thank you. Recently on one of my storytelling shows, you allowed me to read a chapter from the next book, which is not out yet. So thank you for giving me the op on that sneak preview for everybody. That was pretty cool. So great. That's wonderful. Well, listen, I am glad that you're here so that you can help me welcome in Jim Musgrave. And let me tell you, we got a lot to talk to him about. So if you'll help me welcome here, he is an English professor, taught at Caltech. You know, Caltech is the place where the boys, young men from Big Bang Theory allegedly work and or do work, the characters do. And I know he's got a lot of stories about that, but I don't know if we'll get them all out. One day we're going to get them all out of him. But he's also a publisher, author, and I am delighted to welcome back one more time to the Genie Bottle, Mr. James Musgrave. Welcome.
Hello, Andrea. Fantasy realm. That is so
welcome.
Wonderful. You know about those professors at Caltech, they don't live in apartment dwellings with where elevators don't work. You do know that, right? They make six-figure salaries and live in La Cañada, Flint Ridge, some of the highest real estate in California.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the truth.
Well, that's
I used to work there, so.
There's so much you've got going on, Jim, that I want to get into. And I think the first thing we're going to start with is, you know, there's your publishing. And, you know, I've been telling people one of the things that's really cool about you is, you know, you do embrace the idea of just making everything sort of multidimensional and taking advantage of all the resources available to you in these modern times. Because you've added...
Yes.
Music to books, you've added live voices, actors and situations in there. you know, Valentine Wolfe was the steampunk or chamber metal duo that we used once in your books. And I got to meet them. I saw them in a live performance back in January.
They're so great.
And, oh, gosh, yes. But let's start with, and I'm going to kind of cross two sides of the road in a way, but your most recent book, because you had a contest for people to become characters in an asylum, and also then you've got another book coming up that follows it in just a few months. So let's start with that.
Okay. Yeah. It's like I'm on a three-book deal here. That was my third book in the Portia of the Pacific series, which is historical mystery. And my favorite saying, by the way, is from the filmmaker, Kurosawa. He passed away a little bit ago, but he used to say, an artist can never avert his eyes. And I bet my fantasy author knows what that means.
Oh, yeah.
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 Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to show it, you know, the way it really is from an artist's perspective. And sometimes you step on toes. You know, you're going to get called on it, and you're going to get controversy and so forth and so on. Anyway, so the difference between indies and what I like to call the mythical land of the famous authors is that we take more risks. We have to, you know what I mean? Because we're not going to get noticed. That's the plain deal. That's the realistic story I want to impart to anybody out there thinking of being an author, because you're not going to get noticed unless you take a chance. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So this third book was taking a chance. I got involved with five women, which is a risk, but I grew up with, you know, sisters, so I was kind of prepared. but the fantastic response from them, I wasn't prepared for. You know, they were very eager to participate in such a horrific enterprise, you know, being in a 19th century drafty insane asylum that, for example, I did a lot of research, you know, kind of different than the book American Dirt, where the agent claimed that the author did 2 years research. But if you read that book, and I have, you see that there's no way in hell she did 2 years research. Anyway, I won't go into that. But I did a lot of research on the actual Stockton Insane Asylum up there, up north, you know. And the fact was that one out of 45 individuals who lived in California at that time had done some incarceration in some kind of a mental institution. So in California, it was big business then, you know, to be put away.
Wow.
But yeah, so I was working with that, and I also had my historical protagonist, the first female attorney in California, and she won it on her own. Her father was an attorney and a minister, but she earned it. You know, she didn't do a day of law school because that's the way they were then. You know, the men just kind of browbeat her out of school. But she was a successful attorney because she worked hard. Anyway, she's my hero. And so I got these women and I told them, well, you're going to be five suspects. You're going to be patients in the asylum. So in my drawing, I had them draw kind of an outline sketch of what makes them eccentric or what they've done, you know, in their past to be a patient in said fictional asylum. So I got people who really, you know, told it like it was. I mean, for example, Lisa Wilkinson, who proved to be my perfect red herring, you know, for the mystery. We all call her the cutter now because she killed her husband on their wedding night in her wedding dress because he kept bugging her about eating food the improper way and masticating out loud. So she knifed him. So that will give you an idea of her. Because she told me in her, you know, her little bio, you know, well, I'm very eccentric, you know, at the dinner table and this and that. So, you know, Andrea can attest to this. You know, you let your imagination go. And so you bring up, you know, some wild stuff. So, and Lisa was so great, she created a trailer for me also, gratis.
Oh,
I mean, this is like a professional level book trailer, you know, like Stephen King would be envious. I'm not kidding you. But she did it on her own. She put her own kids in the trailer, you know, because they like to dress up in horror costumes and so forth. But Lisa was tremendous. And then I had Jessica Adkins. She had actually, and I think she'd let me explain this because it worked into her character so well. Her best friend when she was 15 was murdered, and she had to testify at that trial, you know, this is like life, you know, this is like Kurosawa looking at it. So I had to, you know, kind of morph that into my fictional character. So I made her have a reality that she believes that everything she's thinking is all that exists. In other words, she creates her reality from her mind, and that all of us are just the characters in it. I'm sure it's been done before, you know, but it kind of worked so well with what she had actually experienced, and she really enjoyed it. You know, when she enjoyed the character, you know, after I finished. But and her mother's a literature professor, and she did too. So I'm kind of impressed, you know, that they liked it. So Lisa or Jessica, you know, she confessed all that to me, and I worked it into the character. And then Sydney Reyes, who's Filipina, you know, I worked her into the character, and I used some background about the Philippines, historical reality at that time. And I also asked her, do you mind if I make you a lesbian? You know, because they were putting lesbians and homosexuals in the asylum very fast, you know. And so she said, no, you know, go for it. You know these kids today. Yeah, go for it. Who cares? Love it. Yeah, just make me, you know, pretty or something. No, she didn't say that. But I did make her attractive. So anyway, she worked out great. And Catherine Yantis, who works with the elderly. I'm sure she was affected. I have to talk to her because she actually works with many of these homes during the coronavirus tragedy, I call it, not a virus. You know what mm-hmm. bugs me? You know, I was going to make a joke about that coronavirus joke, that I worked at Caltech and JPL, and I wanted to get on that Silicon Valley jet that went to New Zealand, you know, when it first started, because all those dudes, you know, hightailed it out of the valley, and they weren't going to hang around. But anyway, people like my wife, who's a nurse for 10 years, people that work in those homes, you know, like the one who took care of my wife before she died of Lewy body, you know, those people are the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the life riskers. You know, they can't run off to New Zealand. They can't shut down.
Mm-hmm.
They can't open up a state like Georgia, you know, that governor of yours.
No.
Governor Dickwad. Oh, excuse me. What's his name?
Mm-hmm.
Brian something.
Kemp. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Kemp.
Yeah. So the
Kemp.
Reality today is that
yeah.
the bottoms are up now, and the Kemps are down, in my estimation, because you can't put people at risk anymore. We have the technology. Mm-hmm. We just, you know, whatever. Anyway, so mental asylum. Catherine Yantas was a cowgirl, and she worked, you know, inside old age homes. That's what we used to call them. What do they call them now? You know, Mount Pleasant or the Gracious Manor. They have all a lot of euphemisms, I guess. But I guess the worse they are, the better euphemism they have. Is that the way it works? No, I don't know.
The
anyway,
last
she
corral or something
went around
like that.
To all these.
Yeah.
Pardon?
The last
yeah.
corral, the .com nursing home, something. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Oh, God. It's going to get morbid. Okay, Catherine Yantas, she was great. You know, she actually cares. You know, she's one of those caring people. But she goes around as a hobby with her family to visit haunted mansions and deserted, you know, places for thrills.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked that right into the character. And then Angela Toma, same way. She was into horror and, you know, visiting haunted places. Her family actually thought she could speak to the dead, which was really the spiritualist movement in this country at one time, and it's still
mm-hmm.
popular, you know. So all five of those women just helped me so much, you know, and were so kind and sharing with their personal lives, and didn't mind that I worked it into the, you know, actually into the character outline and the finished product. And none of them.
Now,
no, I'm not going to tell you. I won't. I'm not going to give any more.
Okay. Well, all right, don't give up too much now, because we want to sell your books here, okay?
Hey, by the way, you said the
character that you worked into a lesbian. Now, did you give a specific type? Because, you know, I was once known as the den mother of most of the musical lesbians and lawyer lesbians in Atlanta, Decatur, because from my TV show.
Yes.
I don't know how it just sort of morphed into that. And I was talking earlier about when I was in Tucson in March, and Andrea here came out to visit. I said, on that day, I wasn't wearing a dress, you know, the Wild West stuff. I was wearing my casual, you know, you've heard the lipstick lesbian. I said, this was my casual Western chapstick lesbian look. So, you know, when they say, make me pretty, make me beautiful, you know, there's a whole different thing for that. So
yeah,
I feel comfortable with the chapstick lesbian.
Yeah, she wasn't a stereotype. I try to stay away from even in the 19th century, I try to stay away from stereotypes. So she was kind of desperate. You know, she was a street immigrant. And so, but she liked girls, you know, and she knew that. And men had treated her poorly, you know. And from the students mm-hmm. that I worked with who were lesbian, they were very adamant about being shit on by men. Excuse my French,
mm-hmm.
you know, but a lot of them were. And so I'm not saying that that's the reason they turned necessarily, but they were very adamant about, you know, being mistreated in some way. So that was her backstory, basically, you know, that she was a girl of the streets in the 19th century, and she kind of got picked up for making a pass at a woman, you know, to make a few bucks, and she was incarcerated in the mental institution. Those were basically prisons in the 19th century. And also, for the families. Families were that's part of my plot, too. You know, the wealthy Nob Hill family incarcerates their daughter, Polly, because they believe, you know, she might say something about her sister who was murdered. You know what I mean? So they say she's crazy. You get her out of the way, anyway. But they were doing
By
that.
The way, it was a money thing too. But yeah, it was nightmarish.
Money.
Then again, we've got things going on today that you know were nightmarish. But
that's true.
Way, this is a good time to
look at our
say,
yeah.
Yeah. Listen, if you're listening live right now, and this is April 23rd, 2020. 8:26 p.m. if you're in the GMT-4 code. If you're listening live, I'm here with James Musgrave, Andrea Walker. I'm Madam Perry, your groove mistress and cruise director. And if you want to call and talk to James Musgrave, the number is 646-716-9922. That is 646-716-9922. If you have a question, just give us a call. We'll be happy to talk to you. Also, for people that cannot make a phone call but have a question or comment, you can just message it into me through Facebook via Jennifer Maudette Perry or Madam Perry Salon on Facebook, and I'll be happy to share it. Okay, well, let's go into the book coming up, too, the next one. Marie, talk about
that.
This
is
that.
The
That's
one I love
exciting.
Because it's where I live, San Diego. And we have a history, too, believe it or not. Not as old as Hotlanta, but, you know, the burning giant. Well, that's Texas. The one with – what was the one, you know, my wife loved it. The burning of Atlanta, Tara, you know. What was the name of that?
The Gone with the Wind.
Gone with the Wind. She read it in one summer school vacation, I think she told me.
Yeah,
her parents weren't too thrilled because they're Jews, you know. The Confederates weren't exactly, you know, personable with the Jews. Anyway, but she loved the romance. That's the part she loved. And I agree.
Yeah.
But anyway, my book is about kind of a boomtown existence in 1888 in San Diego. And all of these characters that I'm using as the principal characters lived there at the time. My character from my whole series of five mysteries moves down to San Diego in actuality, and she buys a newspaper. This was blowing my mind, too, when I realized the disappearance of newspapers now, local newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
In 1888, they had 20 dailies in San Diego, a community of 40,000 people. Can you imagine?
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so Clara
buys
a newspaper. She's going to be rich in San Diego. Yeah, right. No, the ones that were rich, you know, were running the Stingery. And that was what they call for tourists today, the gas lamp quarter. You know, isn't that nice?
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
A nice euphemism. Yeah. But it was a Stingery. And it's where the hookers and, you know, the bars were. Over 200 taverns in, let's say, 25 blocks area. Maybe not even that much. Anyway, so, and over 200, bordellos, you know, or a lot of them were lean-to shacks near the waterfront, you know, that where women kind of put their name out in front. If you've ever been to Holland, you know, where they had the red light district, that's kind of upscale.
Uh-huh.
That's upscale, you know, where they have, you know, they demonstrate their wares to the passing clientele. Anyway, so this is going to be all about Wyatt Earp, who did live there with his common-law wife, Josephine Sarah Marcus. He called her Sadie, and she got pissed off every time he did because that wasn't her name. My name's Sarah, you know. But she's a character, and he's a murderer, accused murderer, because he shoots a guy at the 100-round fight in Tijuana, south of the border where we live here. And he used to do promotions like that to make money. He also ran 4 saloons and gambling halls. And he was Wyatt Earp, you know, OK Corral, you know, the whole bit. So,
right.
He gets this new lawyer in town, my protagonist, you know, Clara Shortridge Foltz, the first woman attorney allowed to practice in California, and she has to defend him. So my whole mystery takes place concerning having to go into the stingery with a doctor who used to take care of these women, and she is also a historical character, Charlotte Johnson Baker. And so she becomes a major character, and they form a team, Shortridge and Baker, Dr. Baker, and this guy, this rookie Tribune journalist, writes a feature article calling them the Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson of the Wild West, you know, being tongue-in-cheek and very, you know, putting them down, so to speak. So anyway, they're the ones who have to crack this mystery and find out why Wyatt Earp shot this Rabbi Sonnenschein, who's a Kabbalah. I had to do a lot. My wife is looking at me from the netherworld right now because I had to do some research into the Kabbalah, which, if you're Jewish, you have to be like, have years of studying the Torah, and you know, before they'll even let you look into the mysticism of Judaism. So you believe I had this to do some research on that? You better believe it. Or my wife is going to curse me from the grave. Anyway, so he's the murder victim, this guy who forms a Kabbalah cult with a bunch of the prostitutes, because he's going to shut down the singery. He's a moralist Jew, you know. He's going to save these poor women from their life of debauchery. And so, but Wyatt guns him down in the middle of the 100-round fight. And so, but of course, my detectives, plural, because Charlotte becomes one as well, want to find out what happened. So I've got 4 chapters finished now. And the first 2 chapters are going to win me an Emmy. Because I channeled those 2 women. I mean, they are in it, especially Ida Bailey, the first one. She belongs in Stockton. Having fun with myself here.
I don't believe that, Andrea. Do you? Andrea?
As a writer, I can tell you. There's 2 different things when you're a reader and a writer.
I can pull it off, Andrea. Yeah. I can pull it off.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. But, it's... Well, I did have a question I'd like to ask. I wanted to know a little bit more about, like, how you're using like actual people instead of like a made up, you know, main character. I want to know a little bit more about that and how you handle that.
That's,
you know, how do you pick?
Yeah, that's
because it's actually related to the Clantons, and to me that would be like with using Wyatt Earp, it's like you're almost in my own family
you
history.
You were related
it kind
to
of
them?
Feels weird. Yeah, I'm related to the Clanton specifically, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm on the bad side.
Wow.
So,
enter my contacts,
yeah, anyway.
Please. I'd love to work you in.
So I definitely am interested
anyway.
In that because it is, yeah, how do you work with that? How do you,
okay,
you know,
how
I've
I do
read,
it?
Yeah.
I don't get a lot. I get my most positive criticism, even from Kirkus and, you know, the hoity-toity reviewers, they say my best feature is doing exactly that, you know, working the plot into the history rather than working the history into the plot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's
yeah.
difficult for me.
Yeah, it's not – for some reason God gave me that gift, you know, to use history as my artist board. And not messing it up, you know, because I do the research. But the characters themselves, there's a lot of leeway, you know, because I really believe this. I think actual human beings, when you get to know them, are much more fascinating than I could ever create if I lived 100 lifetimes. Does that make
mm-hmm.
sense? Because they have so nuanced and so changeable and reactionary and startling and loving and gracious and evil. Oh, man. You know, I just can't do it. So I kind of use my imagination based on those real people that existed. And I think I have a good imagination, I guess. And I try not to get to... Andrea, I want to ask you something. When
sure.
Do you take any creative writing classes?
Yeah,
in college.
Years ago.
Or...
yeah.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Years and years ago.
You remember,
yeah.
You remember what it was like, yeah. But,
oh,
you
yeah.
know, that idea of people would look at you, you know, when you read some stuff and they say, how did you do that? You know, what's the... I always like Flannery O'Connor's response, you know, about writing classes in college and so forth. She said that they're basically useless. She said, you're either a creative writer or you're not. You know what I mean? It's like that kind of thing. Does that ring a bell with you? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway.
I've heard it.
Yeah. So I come from Flannery O'Connor's. Yeah.
Yeah.
School,
well, I guess
of no
is,
school.
Yeah, you've got the talent. Yeah,
yeah.
Talent, and then there's craft, isn't there? Well, okay, let me just say one more
yes,
time.
There
if
is
you want to
craft.
Talk to.
Yes, there is.
Yeah.
But I'm
if
74,
you want to call
so.
In. Say what? Okay. All right. The number to call in, 646-716-9922. Block Talk Radio assures me it is a toll-free call in the continental U.S. Hey, you know what? Jim, if you will look over
yep.
and to your
I'm
right and
on all
part
kinds
the beaded
of people's
curtain,
shows, I know.
Don't worry about it. Part the beaded, they love you anyway. Part the beaded curtain because
yeah.
somebody you know is about to walk right in here. And welcome
oh, no.
back to Madame Perry Salon.
This Jonathan, is this Edwards? This is your life. Please, no.
No. No, come on in and say hello. Welcome to Madame Perry Salon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, this is Gary.
I'm
done.
Hey, Gary.
Oh, not that guy.
Yeah, you old
I
old
thought
cat.
That was
Where's
you
that
outside
you
there.
He
I'm
was so busy.
You owe me money. How you
Still
doing, Jim?
Me
How
down.
You doing, Jennifer?
Clancy lowered the boom.
Hey, doing great.
Good. Good talking to you guys. Hope you're healthy and well.
Yes,
yes.
Hope you
so
all
far,
are as
so
well.
Good.
So, Carrie, do you
There's
want
some
to be
people
in,
coming down
you know, Jim's?
From Atlanta, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Coming down
Jennifer?
From Atlanta? We're already down here.
I didn't mean, I mean the people from the other neighborhoods that are not at Atlanta. all the nail workers.
Oh, okay.
They're going to move to Atlanta, right? Because they can they can work now. They're freed at last. Bottoms will
don't
have
get
to
me started.
Get the militia out there. Yeah.
Okay, so Kerry, we were talking. Andre and I've been talking to Jim about how, you know, he's putting people. You can win a chance, or you can enter for a chance to be in his books as a character in an asylum. I don't know what kind of prize that's supposed to be, or a you're in the book. You're in an asylum, but you're in the book. Okay, that was the other one. Gotcha. I'm just letting you know what you're in for, Kerry. What kind of options could be ahead? Maybe some speaking parts, because you know Jim likes to take advantage of all the modern amenities and capabilities. Or maybe you could even sing in it, Kerry. What do you think?
Well, I think my gifts as a singer would be greatly wasted if I didn't win that one, because people have compared
just
me.
Just barbecue.
Yeah, Frank Sinatra.
Well, tell us about
much.
It. Oh, by the way, stop, guys. Speaking of Frank Sinatra, speaking of Bobby Darin and music of that ilk, Next Wednesday, guest is a singer who's Well, not as far back as you, Jim. But next Wednesday, guest is a singer who was influenced by Bobby Darin. He's going to be on. His name is Don Most. He's an actor, director, singer. But you probably know him as Ralph Mal from Happy Days.
Yeah, he was great. Yeah,
he'll be here. He'll be here Wednesday night. And if you call in, don't say, hey, you were great, or I used to like you on that, okay? That's not good.
You know what I would ask him? Is it like mouth?
What?
M-O-U-T-A. Did they mean his character to be like the mouth? You know, the wise guy? Anyway, I always wondered.
No, that was the actual last name of the character. It was M-A-L-P-H, rhyming with Ralph. Ralph Mouth. I don't know who came up with that.
Yeah, but I thought it was like rhyming with mouth. Anyway.
Oh,
it's the 70s. It's the 70s.
70s, right. You had to be there. Or not be there, considering.
Yeah.
Considering the 70s.
Uh-huh. So he'll be here Wednesday, just let you know. Okay.
I don't know the singer until I saw your advertisement for the show. Donnie Most.
I'm glad you did. So Donnie Most, he's going to be good. I'm really excited about this, and he's looking. He's ready. He's ready for your call, he's really a very nice guy. Very interesting. So he's been fun to talk with so far. So I'm really looking forward to it. So tell us if me or Kerry or Andrea or anybody who's out there listening who is right now Mary Fan. Justine Sims, if any of us want to know how to be part of the next book, Stingery, what do we do?
If you want to be an author who uses this technology, do you think you can craft, you know, a multimedia version of your genre? This is it. This is the future, people. You know, it's. I think it's going to take off because we're going to be hit by these plagues one way or another coming up. And we're going to be sequestered in quarantine, and it's going to become the new normal, you know, because we're not doing anything about the environment. That's my big pet peeve, and I'm with that little gal from Sweden, you know, who should win the Nobel Peace Prize besides golden-haired fuzzy man, you know, in the White House. We have to kick it back a notch.
Go ahead.
You know, don't drive those big gas guzzlers and the jet around all over the place. I loved it when the Joker got on the Academy Awards and told it like it was. You know what I mean? You don't have to fly in on your private jet, you know, to come to the Academy Awards. I love it. You know, it's like, come on, let's roll it back a little bit. And the planet will love us. She's very grateful.
You know, Jim, you just reminded me of something. All three of you here are writers. And so here's a good question for all three of you while you're here. And I think we've got the answer for this, you know, but I want to know all three of you what you think. last week I was invited to be a guest speaker to a group of some senior public relations students at Clark Atlanta University. I'm assuming you've all heard of Clark Atlanta University.
Yes.
Actually, they were the first. They had the first. Their radio station was the first place to play my CD, actually. But anyway, Clark Atlanta University, so I'm speaking to these graduating seniors because their professor had hired me to work for a long time working on film premieres for HBO and stuff. So what do you think they, you know, asked me first? Every single one of them, because they've been handling real-life clients as part of their class projects, and they're about to graduate, and the first thing they're asking me is, every one of them is, I've got this kind of case, I've got this situation, this is my client right now, but we can't go out and be with anybody, and we can't go out and do anything in public. How do we do our jobs now?
Yeah.
And I knew it was going to be coming, so, you know, I had answers for each one. They would give me their specific projects, and I would give them ideas or things that I thought would work for them and help them. But what, Jim, start with you. What?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think having communication that uses as much multimedia as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And develop it into every type of communication. You know, just make it seamless so that the platform can work across multi channels. And let's not just allow corporations, you know, to have the bandwidth. Let's extend the bandwidth as possible so everybody, even independent folks, PR people, authors, artists, musicians, so forth, can get as big a piece of the pie as possible. And they can learn this technology. It's not, you know, it's not exactly rocket science. You know, it's pretty easy. Google's done a lot of work. And although my son teaches physics online now, and he's kind of griping at Google, but he'll admit, you know, they'll get around to it. You know, they'll adapt. And that's the thing about digital, is it does adapt. It just takes the brains to figure out the how we're going to adapt and use it for the purposes it is meant for. Not how we control it necessarily, which is kind of a bad way to look at things, but how it can best serve the public, you know, in the broadest possible way. And I know that's antithetical to our present administration, you know, look at things in kind of a larger perspective, but that's the way it's going to be, whether with him or not. You know, I happen to think if we have a fair election, he's going to get voted out. So, you know, and we'll have once again, hopefully, an administration that has a little bit more savvy when it comes to having technology that can assist most of the people, you know, without any kind of prejudice as to who should get most attention and most devotion to the dollars and education and technology and so forth. I just read a great book, by the way, kind of off the cuff. An attorney who teaches at Yale Law School, Markovitz, V-I-T-S, he wrote this book about the trap of the meritocracy. And if you want to see how education is really divided these days between the haves and the have-nots, you got to read that book. You know, it's like,
all right,
it's a real eye opener if you come from the underclasses the way I did, because I never went to Harvard or Yale, or I worked at Caltech, but and I was around a lot of brains, but I never really had the silk pajama set on, you know.
Yeah.
And this book opened your eyes, you know, to that. Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
We'll check that out.
And
but first
work,
of all,
yeah.
before we go, because before we run out of time, I want to make sure people know that Jim Musgrave, James Musgrave, same guy, his website address is EMRE, which stands for English Majors, Readers, Editors. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, emrepublishing.com.
EMRE.
Go there. There's a contest page. It says 3 readers will become suspects in the interactive 6th mystery of the Portia of the Pacific series, Stingery. So
and
you
want
go to
Andrea,
the website, EMRE.
And I want Terry.
Yes. Yes, I want you all to sign up for that. Go there and enter. Also, I'll also be sharing that website and the contest page where you can submit for that. So don't miss this chance. It's very, it's going
to
be a very exciting
Oh, I wanted to ask Andrea and Terry a question. Could I?
Sure. All right. Sure.
Who impresses you most who critiques your work? A fellow author or some who's, you know, paid, like from Kirkus or one of the big, you know, critical or the New York Times or whatever?
And
are
my
you
only
more
teacher?
Impressed? No. Well, I guess you have. Go ahead. Who else?
I don't know. Andre, do you want to go first?
I would make it either or. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be my favorite author. Probably somebody who is a fellow author, somebody I know. The problem I have always felt with any paid review is, well, you did pay them. So I know that Kirk, for instance, will sometimes let you down, but most of the time, I mean, that profit right there, they're not going to be that honest with you.
That's my sentiment. Fellow author all the time with me.
Yeah, I would say a fellow author because, especially one who's not, you know, gilding the lily a little bit there and, you know, you're the best writer since Hemingway or something. But somebody that
Call
gives
you
an honest
your bullshit.
Take.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and doesn't nitpick on certain things, like, well, I would have done this instead of this. You know, but somebody that reads it honestly and says, you know, one of the best reviews of Joe Peace that I love is fairly critical of it, but, you know, just the whole kind of the genre, you know, overall. And pretty critical of that, you know, kind of the name was too on the nose, you know, kind of stuff. And I was like, well, yeah, you know. but, you know, it's like Stephen
what
King
I loved
said,
about Joe Peace personally as an author was the Kurosawa deal, you know, looking at reality through non-gilded eyes, you know, the kind of natural human humor that tragedy can, kind of like the wartime jokes, you know what I mean? It's like that
humor.
Type of writing is very difficult to pull off, and you did, you know, it's like you're laughing and crying, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't read a lot of that today. The commercial fiction, crap. A lot of
it. It sure doesn't sell, but it's fun to write.
Yeah. No, I don't care. Yeah. So you're putting me down now as a fellow author. Anyway.
Yes, of course. Right. Yes. Fellow authors over any, you know, paid review or something like that.
Yeah.
One paid reviewer
they've
said
usually
I was,
suffered enough, you know, fellow authors. If they're real authors, you know, they've paid their dues pretty much.
You know, and, because what I write, besides you know, promo cover, what I write is creative nonfiction. It's in my Memoirs of a Misanthrope blog, but I do know that I don't write the way you guys write, creating fiction and crafting it and creating fleshing out characters and such. But what you're saying, listen to all of you talk about the different reviews of people and which ones, you know, carry more weight. It makes me think about when I was studying, taking guitar lessons, studying classical guitar, and I remember that my teacher told me, she says, when you get ready to play in front of someone, play in front of a musician that you truly respect, that you
yep.
really admire.
Yep.
Because she says if you play in front of somebody you know that doesn't play guitar, what they're going to hear is you don't sound like the record. But a musician will hear how far you've come. And I think that in some way parallels to what you're saying.
That
somebody
is so
true.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, that crosses all genres of art, you know, that
yeah.
kind of attitude. Because let's face it, if you aspire to be an artist, you're putting yourself on a different level than the normal folk out there. And so you got to be able to take it, you know, both sides. And sometimes you're seen as a genius. Sometimes you're pelted
mm-hmm.
with rotten fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I was listening to Jerry Seinfeld talk about not going to colleges anymore with his humor, you know, because it's become so politically
right.
correct today. And
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of my stuff is never appreciated because of that fact also, you know, that we're so hyper vigilant about not stepping on anybody's toes. You know what I mean? It's like it didn't used to be that way, not when I was younger. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's just
step on their toes.
Yeah.
Thank you for it as a reader, I think. You know, if you can perhaps show forth, and I'm not talking about Nazi
yeah.
propaganda and stuff, you know, when I'm talking
yeah.
about politically
yeah.
correct, I'm talking about, you know,
yes.
simple things. Like a reviewer of Joe Peace suggested that it was racist for me to have Hispanic
yeah.
characters because I wasn't
mm-hmm.
Hispanic. Like, well, it's set in Texas. I mean, how do you write
yeah.
about Texas
yeah.
without having Hispanics? You know,
yeah.
and it wasn't
mm-hmm.
they weren't for Joe Hispanics. They were just normal working cats. Some were criminals. Some were cops. Whatever, but. You know, I wasn't making fun of them or anything or trying
yeah.
to be in their shoes and go, you know, as a Mexican, I would do this, you know, because I'm not Hispanic. So I just told their story as I knew it from, you know, my
sure.
standpoint. There's nothing in it I thought
yeah.
that was demeaning or degrading at all. And I was really taken
yeah.
aback by that. Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you've read that American Dirt novel, Terry, but that's a perfect example of how not to do it, if you want my advice. How to be so smooth that it comes off as unrealistic is the only word I can, you know, it's just like fantasy. Should be a fantasy.
Well, kumbaya for everybody would be nice, but I mean, people are going to have different
yeah.
opinions. I mean, I had a
yeah.
pseudo-Nazi, you know, white Southern racist guy in my book, but I didn't use any racial
you are so
terms, you know,
that.
To
yeah.
spoke, and you know, and I made sure people knew that he was a lousy individual, not just by saying, you know, he's a terrible person,
yeah.
but you know, his whole setting and the way he is. He's a terrible person. Nobody would want to be like him. So I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, folks.
No,
you know what? We're about out of time. I just had that little voice come to my ear, that fake British accent that tells
yeah.
me we're almost out of time. And I am just so grateful to have had you here. Jim Musgrave, thank you so much. We'll be sharing all of this
thank
with you.
Thank you.
Yep. And I
so
hope
fun.
You'll come back again and again. Andrea Walker,
yeah.
much luck with you, too, and everything that you do, and looking for the next book in the Kittry series. Carrie Dunn. Joe Peace is still one of my favorite books, and you know that. And by the way, folks, don't forget Monday night. Oh, don't forget to enter the contest I've got going on. Go to the website. I mean, go to the Facebook page and enter to win free stuff or get discounts from my guests. Also, Monday night, I've got four people who are experts in logistics, global finance, something else, talking about what's going to be going forward, life after COVID-19. And Wednesday night, Donnie Most will be here, and he's a sweetheart of a guy. You're going to love him. So be here with Donnie Most. And I think there's one more thing I've got to say, and that is, of course, the title. Madam Perry, I love you.